Here are some numbers to think about. As pointed out by Lawrence Lessig, 80% of all the money so far donated to the Super Political Action Committees, also known as Super PACs, comes from a total of just 196 Americans. This has been a public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
See, here I trace my steps to where my sense left and brain had turned my sense to mush. This slowly seeping straight through the crust. Now let these stains of gunk slip down to where my head once sunk and drowned. Just to wait for a while to see my body has merged to the deep cool sea. But my soul floats adrift for the smiles, the story lines. The soul's broken down borderlines to cause the tide to enforce the bind.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to Anything Is Possible Radio, 91.5 WMFO. Here we are in the studio, chilling out. Yeah. We got some guests making his first time appearance. We got Lance the Robber. What's up, Lance?
What's good, boys?
Nothing much, just chilling. Feeling okay. Yeah. We got Matt Denieri on the show today, making his second appearance. What's up, dude?
Great to be back, James. Pretty stoked for the show.
I mean, we're talking about some of the best shirts I have ever seen on a human being.
Wonderful.
Animals of all kinds, of course. And finally, Jackson. Not who's on the show all the time.
Yeah, not my first show. Sorry.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
But yeah.
Awesome for you.
Congrats. He's making his 100th appearance today on the show.
Yes. It'll soon be my show.
Yeah, man. Anyway. Yeah, so we've been talking about a few things lately. A few things have been on our minds, and they've really puzzled us. You know,
NBA playoffs.
Yeah, man. Is that mic work? Mic 4.
I don't know.
Here, go on that one.
Hello.
There you go.
Sorry about that.
We got some technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah, there you go. So we're talking about World War II, of course. A really interesting time of American history. Chinese and Japanese history. We had internment camps, right?
Yeah, we did. We did do that. That started in right after Pearl Harbor, December 7th.
There you go.
Wait, the exact day after?
No. But that lasted all throughout until the end of the war. It's pretty screwed up. They took away people's businesses.
Was there any sort of like federal government compensation?
Yeah,
for these people?
Yeah. They did that. I don't remember what year, but they eventually ended up doing that.
Like 20 years after?
Here, I'll look it up.
Alright,
be more precise, but go into the next topic.
But there you go. The point is, like, a large event can influence, like, a country to commit major injustices, you know? It's like, that's the ultimate fuel, you know?
And it wasn't, enemy. Heavily opposed, you know? Like, people were very for the cause, and if you weren't for the cause, you were for the enemy.
I mean, the decision was, like, I feel mostly fueled by public opinion. The government felt like it needed to do something because there was a rising sort of movement throughout the public mind in that point.
Yeah, there's still, like, 100 members of the KKK in, like, the 1920s. Like, that was their highest membership. It's like, this country's come a long way, I think. Still got work to do, but, you know.
There you go.
Yeah, 1988. Ronald Reagan pardoned, issued an apology, and they gave a payment of $20,000, which is equivalent to $40,000 in 2016, to each camp survivor.
Camp survivor, wow, that sounds awful.
Yeah.
That sounds like not even remotely okay.
Yeah, it sounds like chump change too.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, if you're gonna go ahead and say
100,000 people, were interned, and 80,000 were still alive by the time they were repaid. So I don't think many, like, it wasn't a concentration camp. They just kind of held people.
Right.
But still, screwed up.
On to a more uplifting and happy topic. It's nice out.
Beautiful.
I was just up on Tish Roof. Chilling out, and yeah, the vibes are officially here at Tufts University in Medford. There you go. We got a phone ringing right now in the studio. I'd ask the caller to please call back during music. But yeah. The vibes are here. The tours are coming through. And it's an interesting thing, you know? Tours.
Yeah, that is true.
You look back at yourself senior year, right? And yeah. It's like it's to show
transformation. Yeah. How do you show a university also? It's like you can totally brand yourself in one way or another. It's the tour guides, they make a huge influence on what you think about it. Like, one of the reasons why I came to Tufts is because I thought the tour guide was really cool. And, you know, that was a huge motivating decision. And I've been to places where I did not like the tour guide, and that definitely impacted what I thought of the school.
It really is absolutely crucial, you know, like, having an actually good experience. And, you know, it's like you have to tour the school that you go to. I mean, I almost think it's like a little bit, you know, a little bit like headstrong to like go into a college, never enroll in a college, never having been to the campus.
You absolutely have to tour. Like, it's seen as an oddity if you don't.
Right.
That's part of, like, what makes the touring, like, so, when you're on the tour, like, you can look at the kids taking the tour, and, like, you can see they're thinking about every little thing that the tour guide says. Like, yeah. Everything is going to directly impact their decision on where they're going to be for the next 4 years.
Right on.
So, like, that 30-minute tour, their brains are working, like, a hyper pace.
It's analytical.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think the tour guide screening process is like?
I don't know, but if I was a tour guide, I'd feel like so much pressure giving those tours.
Yeah, I
like,
would too.
When you put yourself in that position as a senior, like, you're really thinking of like this guy's personality as like representative of like the entire school's campus, which is kind of unfair. Like, you're making these assumptions from like what one person is giving you, but that's like the reality, like, you know?
Definitely, definitely.
I liked my tour guide because, you know, he was pretty quirky. He had a hat that was like a fox head.
Oh, really?
And I was like, yeah, I can vibe with that. I like this guy's style, you know?
I think mine was a... He was like an ultimate frisbee player, but he's just really cool. He made some jokes about Tish Roof on the tour. Jokes about the campus in general. I thought he was really funny. He was a good guy.
Yeah, man. Tufts University. We're talking about how Tufts University is not exactly what it brands itself to be. It is. I mean, I guess that applies for every school, but it's like you don't really know your school until you've been there for maybe a semester, you know?
Yeah, it's
it takes a while
semester.
To get the vibe. Yeah.
Did you guys do overnight tours as well for Tufts?
Yeah, I did. I did one with I stayed with Greece last year on the cross country team, and it was really cool.
I didn't stay overnight.
Me neither.
Do they have the Jumbo Days overnights coming up soon?
Yeah, they did.
I think they had one this weekend, didn't they? Because I saw a ton of kids walking around the academic quad on Saturday. Like high school looking kids.
Yeah, man. Wow. I mean, like, think of the transformation in 4 years. A college student starts college as, like, the most underdeveloped, you know, essentially child, and is gonna, you know, completely every year reinvent themselves. You know what I mean? Honestly, I mean, same person, but like a very different vibe every single year.
That's true. I think that's totally true.
Yeah, that's wild.
Do you think you reinvented yourself when you went to college?
Definitely. I think I am the version of myself currently is very different than the version of myself last year. It was very different than the version of himself that the year before, you know. It's just a cycle. What do you think?
I agree with that. I think I'm definitely a different person than I was a year ago. I mean, probably not. I think as you spend more years in college, maybe those changes become like more fluidly.
Yeah, man.
But I'm this last semester and a half has definitely been somewhat transformative. And I think if you haven't experienced that, you probably haven't been fully into the experience.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're not changing in college, you might be a little boring.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you stay the same person as you've always been, there's just so many different people here that can influence you in so many ways. And I don't know, I find I'm very impressionable, can change quite often.
Also, we don't talk about personality types and the degree to which people are design their personality, are actively, like, preemptively choosing to act a certain way, versus people who are completely in the moment people. You know, like, I am not going to choose anything about how I act. It's all going to be spur of the moment decisions that lead up to, like, you know, just habitual acting.
Yeah, you could be so structured, or you can just, you know, there's kids who just don't show up to class.
Think about, like, a really smart person with, you know, limited social skills. Mm-hmm. They could probably come up with, you know, somebody was saying this about, like, some of the most quirky and witty people of all time, you know. Would they still be considered that witty and, like, inventive in terms of language if they just stayed up all night, like, choosing the responses they were going to have to things and, like, planning out stuff?
Yeah, no.
You know? It's like, but, like, the thing is, you can totally do it. You can totally pull it off. Yeah. You can totally say, I want to be this kind of person. I want to do this. And then add that to yourself just by reflecting on it, thinking about it, and then practicing. You know what I mean?
I think those people are somewhat common. Like, I think we all probably know at least one person who sort of practices to act a certain way.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like very deliberate in the things they say and how they act. But then the question I would have on that is one necessarily better than the other? Because we could rush and say that just acting in the spur of the moment is like more natural. But do you think like deliberately acting a certain way is necessarily?
I don't think it's worse? A crime. Like,
I think it shows some level of like
baseness.
No, like discipline and like care.
Okay.
You know? Fair. I'm not saying I would do it.
Yeah.
But it does show certain positive aspects.
Definitely. Agreed.
Do you have a band coming on?
We have no band coming on, unfortunately. We would love to have a band coming on.
There's a band here for 4:30. So, I'll still know their
place. We're just receiving word that there is a band in the studio interested in performing. I hope this happens. Of course I love live music. And yeah. It's one of the greatest things about radio. I mean, live performance. You can't really get that on you can listen to a live recorded. For you when you listen to a live recorded thing, do you get the same experience as when you know it's happening? Like a performance?
No, definitely not.
Wait, this is comparing a live performance to not live?
So like you're streaming a live performance of a band.
Okay.
But compared to that to like...
Compared that to not being at an actual performance?
Or compare that to just like getting a tape of getting a video, just watching a YouTube video of a band.
Okay.
You know, like the Coachella live streams. It's a popular thing.
Yeah, I feel like that's a thing. People don't go to Coachella, but like watch it.
It's a thing, yeah. I think people like are really into watching the whole festival. You know, like watching things real time as they happen.
I feel like I could only be into live music if I was like there, like in the crowd.
I agree, absolutely.
Like, I don't know. I have like
definitely.
I don't know. Like, I've listened to like a few songs live that are just like. That I wouldn't be able to find recorded because they've only been like covers of different songs live, if that makes any sense.
Right on.
But other than that, I mean, I haven't been to too many concerts, but like every experience I've had has been pretty enjoyable. Definitely more so than just listening to music by itself.
Agreed. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, like, especially when you can see the talent. I know, like, I can definitely see the appeal of like going to see, you know, one of the most talented like instrumentalists, like cellists or like violin players in the world, you know?
That's what jazz is, all improvisation.
Yeah, going to see one of the most talented jazz pianists or trumpet players in the world. And just to marvel at the work ethic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Dude, it's incredible. Like, I used to play trumpet, and I would watch all these videos of these like jazz performers just doing like these improv solos, and like some of them were just so consistently jaw-droppingly amazing. And I wonder how they practice. To literally, I mean, they're pretty much just making it up on the spot.
Right.
I mean, they have some basis, obviously, but like they are, it is improv. And yeah. And they hit a home run every time. They're batting 100.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's incredible.
I know my brother did this master class with a great Cuban jazz pianist. Goes by the name of Chucho Valdez.
Mm.
This man, he asked him, like, do you have any, like, things that you think of or repeat in your solos? Do you like go in with a sort of methodology to your solo? What's going on in your mind? And he's like, there is absolutely none at all. He will absolutely play in the moment completely.
That's amazing.
No forethought at all, and it will just be unbelievable. You know, it's just stream of consciousness stuff, basically.
It's crazy. It's, I mean, that brings up the question, kind of like, is musical talent, can musical talent really be taught, or is it just discovered?
It's really kind of two kinds, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This reminds me of this article I read, like, a week ago or something, about this guy who, like, was never good at music. Like, he could keep a beat, but, like, he was not good at music. He had never learned how to play the piano or anything.
Right on.
And then he got struck by lightning, and he was in a coma for 3 days. And then he wakes up after the 3 days, and the first thing he has to do, he just feels like for some reason he has to play the piano. And he goes and he starts playing the piano, and it's beautiful. It's marvelous. And he felt like he had to keep playing the piano. It felt like he described it as if it was bubbling up inside of him, and like he would burst if he didn't let it out somehow.
Yeah.
And since he got struck by lightning, he's been incredible at the piano.
That's crazy.
We should be able to study like the ways that could rewire your brain to make you want to do that stuff.
Or if it like hits some sort of nerve connection.
Yeah, so that's
in some specific part of the brain.
They think that the electricity surge caused certain neurons, and they were able to actually look at brain scans of his in the past, and then they took some after, and they saw that it concentrated certain neurons in a specific part of your brain. And we don't actually yet have like the knowledge of every part of the brain. Like, we're always finding new like connections and like what part of the brain's activate when.
Totally.
So now they're doing research to see what part, like that part of the brain that stimulated neuron growth, and how that relates to musical talent. So he's actually like a case study for that exact thing.
There you go.
You guys ever been struck by lightning?
No.
Not even once. Like, just hasn't happened to me, you know? I've never even felt like it could happen to me.
You've never gotten lightning struck near you?
Yeah.
No, I've never seen that.
Got struck by lightning. That was really
strong. That's crazy. Is it a big thing in Florida?
Yeah, it happens all the time.
To people?
Yeah.
You hear about that?
Like, the pastor of the church my family went to, he got struck by lightning.
It's because, like,
he was holding an umbrella.
In the summer, like, every single day.
Survived.
Not so much anymore.
Afternoon rain.
Every single day, like clockwork, right around 2, 3 o'clock, you'd have a thunderstorm until, like, 5 or 6, and it'd be, like, a huge thunderstorm, tons of lightning. It'd be like, pretty incredible to watch a lot of the times, actually.
Yeah.
But not so much anymore for some reason. But, yeah, it happens all the time to them.
What's the science behind thunderstorms?
What is it? Lightning is all pressure, right? And electrons.
Wow. Holy crap.
Fast and Furious.
Out there.
Fast and Furious Medford. Let's go.
Vin Diesel out here.
Jeez. Massachusetts drivers, man. I'm telling you. But yeah, it's pressure. It's like, right?
Charge particles in the air.
Yeah, charge particles in the air.
I mean, if you're like a primitive culture, how can you not see that and be like,
that is
evidence of God striking down on us?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's absurd.
Totally fine to think of.
Yeah. And it's like, understand it a little bit more, and it's like, all right, now we're modernizing, you know? I mean, like, even like medieval times, you know, what were they thinking about that kind of stuff? What were they thinking about science?
In the revolutionary period, people still saw that. Like, Benjamin Franklin invented, you know, the antenna on the lightning. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, right, yeah.
The lightning rod.
The kite with the key.
Yeah, the lightning.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Anyway, he invented that, and people were still super skeptical. Because, you know how fires were fought in those days? It's, like, terrible.
Yeah, man.
What'd they do?
It'd be like a bucket, and you know, you'd have one central pail on the horse and buggy that had the
all the water.
So
just like
just
buckets.
Yeah, and they'd have a line, and they would just toss it.
I feel like they should.
You didn't have hoses.
I feel like they could have gotten something better though, like some sort of like gravity-fed system that would have the water pour out like pretty fast. You know, like
build a river.
Build it up high, you know what I mean? And then it could be like a big moving mobile hose type thing.
Before like city grids and stuff like that, and there were codes to actually buildings, like fire was such a scary thing.
Dude, and because it would spread, like, from house to house. Too.
Yeah,
it could
yeah.
destroy, it could destroy
That's
entire settlements.
That's why zoning.
It could destroy entire settlements.
Dude, the fire of London in 1666, the...
tons of
the,
fires.
The San Francisco fire, the Chicago fires...
This is all Lenning, right?
Well, I mean, materials themselves were more flammable back then.
Well, we built mostly with wood.
Yeah, the 1903 earthquake in San Francisco started that one. The London one, I think, is lightning. I don't know about the Chicago ones. I can't speak to that.
But, like, anyway, absolutely.
Wild.
I mean...
The great Boston molasses flood.
You know? There you go.
That's crazy.
That was a thing, right? That was a thing.
I still think it's absurd that that was a thing.
It sounds like a story. It sounds like a fairy tale.
Yeah, like the types of tanks that you see, like
so
next
talk a little
to the
bit
highways,
about that.
Or like they had these like enormous tanks of molasses, which is basically like a form of sugar. I think like after you kind of cook it past brown sugar,
mm-hmm.
that was a lot more popular back then, I guess.
Right. Okay.
And
but it's not syrup.
Yeah, it's not.
It's like syrupy in texture, though. Isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's really, really viscous, and that's what made it a huge problem. I think it was like a.
This is like the
result of
villain.
Yeah, I think it happened in the winter as a result
flood
of
the city with molasses,
like heating and cooling. Like it might have froze up too quickly.
Okay.
And caused like the tank to kind of like warp and increase the pressure inside until it like burst or something like that.
Yeah, like, man.
Yeah.
And what was the aftermath?
What year did this happen?
I think it was like 1920. I don't know how many like people were like hurt or anything like that. I just would imagine it was like super messy.
Yeah, ultimately like
1919.
Oh, 1919. I was
really an absolutely trippy thing to happen.
The photos, even in black and white, look absurd.
Yeah.
Wait, let me see.
Killing 21 people and injuring
21 people. Wow.
150. Dude, this is
how fast did it spread? Like it's molasses.
It said rush through streets at an estimated speed of 35 miles per hour.
Wow. Getting hit with like a solid block of cement.
There you go.
It's
like a flash flood, but harder.
Decades afterwards, residents claimed that on hot summer days the area still smelled of molasses.
Yeah, I can imagine.
That's sick. I mean, like, you see a giant wave of molasses coming at you.
At 35 miles an hour.
You gotta think, like, this is the work of God, you know?
Absolutely, like, yes.
40-foot wave of molasses buckled the elevated railroad tracks, crushed buildings, and inundated the neighborhood. Structural defects in the tank combined with unreasonably warm temperatures contributed to the disaster. That's crazy.
There you go. See, that stuff, I don't think would happen today, could ever happen today, honestly. You know? And it's like, this is technology protecting us. We have an absurd amount of metrics available for us. To like see tank pressure, stuff like that. We have unbelievable building materials. I mean, it hasn't really hit people yet. The kind of technology we're dealing with. You know what I mean? It hasn't hit the mainstream. Like, people are so old, they're used to living in a time when we didn't have that stuff. So I would definitely guess that the general feeling is that technology is a lot more, that things are done simpler than they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
That I don't know, but it's just like we're on another level now, you know?
We also just have so much technology. We have so much technology that's not really like available yet to the public.
Totally, yeah.
And like the public is not getting like the cream of the crop technology. We're getting the stuff that's been deemed safe enough and not harmful enough for us to have. But if you look at the type of software and computing things that they have in for like government or like Russia's cyber army, the things that they have or things that US has probably even better. All our cyber weapons are just incredible, and our ability to track people down over the internet and the CIA's all of their cybernetic weapons and tools, it's just incredible.
Like Hackerman?
Yeah, like Hackerman. Like
Hackerman.
Chris Gregory.
Chris Gregory is the Hackerman.
Shout out Chris Gregory.
I heard that.
Shout out to Chris Incredible Gregory. Stuff.
I actually did hear that Chris Gregory was the Hackerman.
I mean, he is the...
The...
Hackerman. But yeah. Anyway. Awesome convo. You're listening to 91.5 WMFO Medford. Tufts Freeform Radio. This is Anything Is Possible with James Gregoire and co. We're vibing right now. We got some tunes for you, and then we'll be back. Stay tuned.
Thank you. Just grab the.
We are back on Anything Is Possible Radio. Hope you enjoyed that last tune. Jackson, fill us in.
Guillermo Portables. That is El Carretero. Cuban music. Good stuff. Would highly recommend.
Fantastic stuff. Awesome. Great vibes. Anyway, here's the question we are currently pondering.
Anything is possible, so...
Anything is possible. Did Adolf Hitler escape to South America? Did it happen? Did he live on past the end of World War II?
So, I think to begin, we have to just say that most mainstream historians say no.
Right, right.
But...
this show, it's not a matter of if he did, it's about when he did.
It's about chances. There's a chance. There's a chance of anything.
Anything's possible.
So they've never found the body of Hitler. Nothing has been confirmed in that department. And there have been many leads and sightings in Argentina and Brazil that even the FBI has looked into this, and the Soviets have done their own investigation work. So it's been taken seriously enough by other people.
I mean, that young guy who was a guard apparently gave conflicting reports of what he saw on that day. We won't go into the details, but he, you know, it's very curious, you know, it's it's clear, like, how he could be not an accurate
There's some discrepancies.
Source. Definitely.
It's definitely worth a closer look.
And it's not foolish to think that they didn't have the resources to do it.
And also, right. it's important to...
They had all the art treasures and a lot of the gold from you know, the countries that they took over.
And it's not an unprecedented thing, because there are very documented accounts of a lot of Nazis towards the end of World War II escaping to countries like Argentina and Brazil. And that's why you find a lot of Argentinians, especially, I'm not so sure about Brazilians, to be honest, but a lot of Argentinians who have very, very German-type features, very blonde hair, angular faces, blue eyes. And it's like,
well, there's a lot of immigration there happening anyway, but from Europe.
Yeah,
also.
but there was a direct influx at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the '50s.
Yeah, but it had been going on before that.
No, well. I understand.
Yeah.
But there you go, and they saw him, didn't they? Some people claim to have saw him.
Yeah.
But honestly, who knows?
And they found the number two. They found Himmler. They found Heinrich Himmler in Argentina.
Himmler?
Yes. They found him in Argentina a lot of years later, and they took him to Israel, and they hung him.
Himmler?
Himmler.
How long was he there?
He was there... They found him in, like, past the 1960s. I will look this up right now.
Anyway.
On the edge of your seats.
You know, it's interesting. Another big one is the pyramids. How did they build the pyramids? How'd they do it? Didn't they, like, put it under a mound of dirt or something like that?
No,
Or they just lifted those blocks?
I think they had...
Slave labor, right?
Yeah, well, they had tons of slaves.
Are you talking about where they got them from or how they stacked them like that?
How did they stack them like that?
They had, like, ramps going around. Ramps. They had, like, inclined ramps, like, just going around, like, spiral.
It's amazing what people can be driven to do. I mean, like, I guess they were really stable. You know, they had a really stable situation. They were just like, all right, slaves, prioritize this stuff. News
here. Adolf Eichmann, I was wrong on Himmler. Himmler was killed in 1945 in the Nuremberg trials, but Adolf Eichmann fled to Argentina and lived there until 1962, when he was found guilty of war crimes and hung in Jerusalem in 1962. That's wild.
There you go.
So it's not out of the ordinary to think that.
When was the Geneva Convention?
Ooh. That is a good question for an IR major to know.
International relations, fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
Because I thought they had been around before World War II, but I also have a vague memory of the Geneva Convention being directly after World War II. Or maybe
18,
after World War I.
1862 was their first one, but they had another one in 1949.
There we go.
So, yes.
There you go.
That is probably why I was confused.
I'd like to interrupt this subject with a quick PSA to show that we are a true educational radio, WMFO, 91.5 FM. We're talking about ladder safety. There's something very dangerous in your home. It could be hiding in a closet or waiting in the basement. It's not sharp or toxic or flammable, yet it helps send more people to the trauma center than any other household item. Can you believe that?
No, that is fascinating.
I can kind of see it. Like, what other household items are there that cause trauma?
Those can be treacherous.
Yeah, man.
Get some precipitation on there.
Especially when one of the legs are like. It's almost impossible to get a ladder. I mean, just like mathematically, to have 4 points on a single plane is extremely hard to do. So you always end up with a ladder that's a little shaky, and some lower quality ladders are bound to be a bit shakier.
Yeah. Honestly, using a ladder might seem easy, but misusing one is even easier. Ask any of the 150,000 people. 150,000 people who fell off their ladders into the trauma center last year alone.
They fell directly into the trauma center?
They fell right in the trauma center, yeah.
It's amazing. That happened, the trauma center part didn't happen, but the dangers of a ladder I've seen firsthand. My dad had one of those kind of like ones that you can kind of fold out.
Right, it's
like,
on.
Yeah. And he was like doing some trimming on one of our trees in like the yard next to our driveway. And I get back from school and I'm like inside for a while until I hear my dad like trying to yell to us outside or like get our attention.
Yeah.
Until he come out there. He's still in the tree. Just like kind of sitting on like a thick branch, but the ladder that he had been trying to use to go down, he had like taken a step on it and the metal had just like basically ripped, and
the metal ripped,
and so he couldn't take another step down from the ladder, and so we had to like figure out how to get him back down from like 15 feet up. It was kind of a mess.
Help, my dad's stuck in a tree.
Yeah, there you go. That was literally what happened.
Sounds like your dad needs a Werner brand ladder, official ladder NCAA men's championship.
Oh, right on.
Net cutting and WMFO.
We'll have Lance sell it to him. Yeah. Definitely,
you gotta watch out for
30 Lower Campus Road is the address for the check.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, if I were to give you some advice, don't let a do-it-yourself project do yourself in. For tips on ladder safety, visit orthoinfo.org/ladder safety. This has been a public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and your safety-minded friends here at WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio. Educational. That was lovely. Thank you, American Orthopedic Society.
They're looking out
is that what it is? I don't know. They're looking out for us. They want us to stay safe. These people are honestly committed to the cause.
Hearts of gold.
Saving lives. And there you go. Anyway.
Don't do it yourself.
Don't do it yourself.
Moral of the story.
Never do it yourself.
But it's a huge industry, isn't it? Home improvement.
Oh, definitely. Lowe's, Home Depot.
I mean, people love that
stuff.
My
dad loves that stuff.
It's honestly like home just a hobby, basically.
Home improvement.
When you're a stay-at-home dad, you know, it's something that's easy to get into.
My dad is in his element. You know, there's books on Zen and stuff like that. My dad, if he had a book about it, it'd be like Zen and the Art of Making My House Clean and Organized.
Definitely.
There's a, I mean, one of the biggest subreddits is a do-it-yourself subreddit, like all dedicated to home improvement projects that people take on themselves, and it's like a step-by-step kind of tutorial for anyone who wants to try the same thing.
Yeah, we have a friend who's frequently on the show, Mac McDermott, and he was telling me this week how he would build like a luge, like, you know, the sport, for street in the summer. They'd build a street luge with decks of longboards and PVC pipes to control it.
Oh my god.
Right on.
Sounds really scary.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely terrifying.
And he said you could get up to, like, you know, they'd have people on bikes who would be spotters, quote unquote, but they could never keep up with the street luge down the street.
Oh my god.
He said get up to 40.
That sounds exceedingly scary.
Yeah.
Were there brakes on this street luge?
You know, I didn't ask that.
Oh man. Like, have you seen that video of the
You could really,
you know, you see those,
you could really do some cool stuff with DIY.
You see those longboarders barreling down those streets, right? You've seen
those.
That stuff is treacherous.
Like the power sliding ones.
Yes.
Bro, and a lot of the times, like, they're
Matt,
just,
doesn't your brother do that?
There.
Yeah, my brother's pretty into downhill skateboarding, and especially out in California where he is now, there's a lot of good hills for that. A few times, I mean, I would bomb hills a few times, but, you know, not the really big ones, and I'd skin my knees a few times, but one thing that we would do was just sit on the longboard and just butt board fast as we could downhill.
That's a little less treacherous.
Oh, wow.
And It's still pretty treacherous, you know. You
got a lower center.
That's true.
Dude,
but
you get a fair bit of speed on those still.
Yeah, I think in some of the hills near Wells in Massachusetts, you can get going like 40 or something like that.
That's incredible.
That's really sick,
dude. Yeah. Over winter break, I was in. We don't have hills down in Florida, but we have big parking garages.
Yeah, right on.
Which have inclines, so it counts.
Yeah.
I was going in a penny board with these two other guys who were very good at skateboarding. They're just like, oh yeah, let's go down the parking garage hill.
Yeah.
And like I wasn't gonna say no, obviously. So, but I'm terrible at penny boarding. It's like these tiny boards.
Absolutely, tiny
plastic boards. And to make it worse, I was wearing flip flops. But they're already going, and I wasn't gonna not go.
Right.
So, but like instantly, as soon as I went down the hill, I realized like, I'm screwed. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm going way too fast.
Yeah.
Oh man, and I ended up just bombing the entire thing, and I was gonna crash into these like metal, like car lift looking structures that they have lining the outside of the parking garage.
Right on.
But I tried to brake. I ended up basically just like, long story short, I just like hit stick the ground. But I hit the ground so perpendicularly that as fast as I was going, I didn't skid an inch. I literally just banged the side of the ground and stopped dead.
How bad did that feel?
I literally couldn't walk the rest of the day. My my entire left half of my body was like visibly swollen.
Wow.
Yeah,
was the experience worth it?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Still gonna send it.
Still gonna send it.
Are you guys silly?
Shout out Pat.
I can relate to that experience.
Finn Pounds is also really good downhill skateboarding.
I mean, this guy's great.
Yeah, he's sponsored by some small groups. Yeah, he has his own longboard called the Pounder.
The Pounder.
The Pounder.
It's pretty legit stuff.
There you go. You've been listening to Anything Is Possible Radio on 91.5 WMFO Medford. Somerville, Tufts University, Massachusetts. United States of America.
Western Hemisphere.
West Side.
Earth.
I mean, yeah, for perspective, we are on Earth. Remember that.
I agree.
Radio waves travel indefinitely, right? So this is that's for all our extraterrestrial listeners.
Yo, aliens, check it out. Go to the online store, buy the merchandise. Anything is possible.
Shipping might be a little extra for them, though.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, you might have to, I don't know, you might have to show up. Show yourself. That's what I'll say. Anyway, thanks so much. We love our listenership dearly.
And Werner Ladders.
We love Werner Ladders. And yeah, tune in next week. WMFO Volunteer Day is today. come by if you're a DJ and do some volunteer hours, maybe. But yeah, if not, don't come through. You probably won't be able to get in the door. It'll probably be locked for you. So sorry about that. But yep. Peace out. This has been James Gregoire,
Lance HK,
Matt Denieri,
Jackson, man.
If you see us, say hi to us on campus and say that you listened, and we'll be like, what? Oh, okay. Wow. Damn.
People do this.
That's wild. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Goodbye for real. Goodbye forever. Peace out.
Alphabet. When I wake tomorrow, I'll bet that you and I